And actually, I had a really, I had a question for you.
Oh no.
What's your favorite thing to do on a Sunday?
Well, it used to be go hiking.
Well, it used to be go take a hike out in the woods, but now.
Oh, well, fuck. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. It's Karina.
And Clark.
And welcome to It's Always Spooky.
It's always spooky.
Welcome back. Today, we are talking about 1999's The Blair Witch Project.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm actually pretty excited for this because this is another one of those classic timeless horror movies that I had not seen all the way through. I've seen several of the scenes and have watched a ton of breakdowns and a ton of lore for this film, but I've never actually seen it all the way through.
Sick. And I'm glad that you got to watch it.
It was entertaining. It was entertaining as fuck.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I know, like, there have been a few of them that they've just always been in the zeitgeist. So I as well have been like, yeah, whatever. I've heard everything about it. I don't need to watch it.
Yeah.
Very much so that way with like Halloween.
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm glad you got to watch this one.
Well, and like, I know I watched Paranormal Activity first, definitely. So by watching Paranormal Activity first and knowing that Blair Witch Project was kind of the inspiration for Paranormal Activity,
yeah,
it was cool to go back and like see a lot of those same threads. You're like, oh, okay, now I see where Paranormal Activity got it from.
Yeah, and in some ways, I kind of feel like Blair Witch did it better. Like,
well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can see where Paranormal Activity took from the source material, but I'm like, Blair Witch, especially since all of the camera dynamics and that sort of stuff weren't played out at that point, it just felt a little better executed in certain spaces.
Yeah, the way that they shot the Blair Witch Project was very unorthodox.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that, and we can kind of chat about it throughout the episode today or more through the trivia. But it wasn't necessarily like there is a director there giving feedback and like yelling cut and then action. Like the entire thing was shot by the three actors that were in the woods.
It was very much so shot in the way that it was received by the audience. Like there wasn't a whole lot of structure to what they were doing. At least from what I understood, it sounded like there was a lot of just like, hey, we're going to do this part where we're going to talk about the lore, which is exactly what we saw watching it, was her being like, hey, I'm going to go do a little take up here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, because I think the intention was that the three hikers had gone missing. And then a year later, the footage that they had left behind had been found. Mm-hmm. And the private investigators or the police or whoever had compiled all of the footage into what they thought was the sequence of events that had played out.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you're watching, is you're watching like these three people who, it seemed like Heather was kind of like the director, right?
Yeah.
Where like this was her student film and then, or maybe it was her and Josh's student film and they hired Mike to like help them.
Yeah.
We don't really know what the story is, but it kind of just starts out as like this documentary that they're creating about an urban legend in a town and then them going into the same woods that entity used to live in or used to haunt, like where the urban legend originates from. They decide to go there, see if they can catch anything on film and make this documentary about it.
Yeah. And before we get any further into it, I do want to say, I feel like this is some shit we would have done. Like, this is 100% something that like you and I would be like, hey, we heard some shit happen out here. We're going to go see if we can find it.
I'm going to get a video camera.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring my phone.
Yep.
A flashlight and some salt.
Yeah.
And crucifix.
Yeah. And a crucifix and potentially a parabolic microphone.
Yeah.
And don't forget an EMF reader.
Yeah. And what did you get the thermometer? So to round back so we can get our metadata through for this movie, we're doing 1999's Blair Witch Project. The director is Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez. Stars Heather Donahue, Michael C. Williams, and Joshua Leonard playing themselves. The tagline for this movie is, "The scariest movie of all time is a true story."
Ooh.
And "Everything you've heard is true."
Ooh.
I liked both of those taglines. The title card for this is very student film documentary. Black screen, white font.
Uh-huh.
The Blair Witch Project.
I think it might even be like Times New Roman.
Yeah.
Double space.
It's some
one
real,
inch margins.
Yeah. It's a free font for sure. But yeah, that's the Oh, actually, I can't believe it.
Budget.
I didn't write down budget, and I have to.
Budget is actually like, this is the inspiration for a slew of low budget found footage films that came out within just like a few years after this.
Yes.
And I think if I remember correctly, when we covered Paranormal Activity was the second highest grossing
just
found footage film, just behind Blair Witch.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So budget of an estimated $60,000. $60,000.
Wow.
Estimation.
I'm actually kind of surprised it even cost that much.
I know. I am too.
Oh, maybe it's because they shot a lot of it on film too.
Yeah.
So I bet that's a big part of it.
Opening weekend was July 16th, 1999, $1.5 million.
Wow. In the opening weekend. Damn.
Yeah. Gross in US and Canada, $140.5 million.
Jesus Christ.
And gross worldwide was double that at $248.6 million.
Holy shit.
So yeah, that's why
on that is nuts.
It's the highest profit, probably the highest profit margin of all time, probably even to this day.
Yeah,
unless Milk and Cereal does better, but we'll see.
Which honestly
it should. Definitely should.
I did write a brief synopsis for this one.
Sick.
Legend has it the woods surrounding the town of Burkittsville, Maryland are cursed. Three aspiring filmmakers are determined to uncover the truth behind the lore, if they make it out alive.
I love that. It's actually really good. Yeah, I liked the beginning of the film with the this little documentary style where they're like walking around the town and interviewing all the townsfolk. Like I did think that was pretty cool. And then going to the cemetery and chatting about some of the different events that had taken place in relation to the town. I thought those were some cool scenes, like before they go and get lost in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. I did think it's pretty comical how quickly they get lost.
I think, it is comical. I think it is also kind of accurate too.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of people they underestimate how easy it is to get lost in the woods and how hard it is to like kind of navigate and orient yourself, even if you have a map and a compass. And one thing that I was seeing in a lot of the breakdowns was that like the reason why their compass wasn't working was because of all of the metal in all of their video equipment that would have been messing with the compass.
That makes sense.
Which is what's really funny is that like if you're not used to being outside or like having to orient yourself, I want you to find like a sound bit for this part of the episode from Stranger Things.
Okay.
Because I know you've seen season one.
Yes.
When they're walking on the train tracks and they think they're going one direction and Dustin's like, no, we're not. That's east. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he says, the sun rises in the east and it sets in the west. I don't care what the compass says. We're not going the right direction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I thought constantly in this movie where I was like, if you're looking at the compass and the compass says south and I'm going south and I'm constantly going south, but like I look up at the sky and like west is that way, the sun is setting that way, I'd be like, wait a second. This can be wrong. That can't be wrong.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, the sun hasn't decided it's going to go a different direction today.
But anyways.
That's also, it does go to say, back then it was one thing. Today, map reading and direction and that sort of stuff, everybody's lost it.
Out the window.
Like
if you don't have the GPS on your phone, fucking get out of town.
Exactly.
Ain't happening.
Yeah. For themes for this movie, I wrote a local legend.
Yeah.
Occult history.
Mm-hmm.
And found footage.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking like survival.
Yeah.
No, I like all those. That's tight.
Sick.
It's a tight themes list.
Should we get into lore?
Yeah. Honestly, I definitely want to get into lore for this one. I am just looking to see where I want to start with mine.
I have a timeline. I have lore.
Sick. Okay.
I have lore broken up into two sections.
That's a good idea. Okay.
So I have lore for the Blair Witch And then I have lore for who the Blair Witch is rumored to be based on.
Damn. Yeah. One of these days, like, these notes that you take are going to be gold on the like Patreon.
I'm so stoked.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mine are going to be chaotic and crazy, and then yours are going to be super meticulous.
And you know what we're going to do? We're going to sell yours for more. That's what we're going to do.
I will tell you, I actually, this is the one of the first times I've ever filled a journal from like very, very start to very, very finish. And this is like probably 80% just notes for our podcast.
Hell yeah.
And I just bought two more. Like, hell with the yeah. explicit like use of using them for the podcast. So
starting with the Blair Witch, and just yeah. like stop me when you have something to throw in.
I will.
Sick. Okay, so my timeline starts 1634.
Ooh, my timeline does not start that far back, so I'm excited.
Okay, cool. So 1634, there is a gentleman who. I don't think they actually initially said what exactly he was fighting for, that sort of thing.
Oh, you're talking about the Fort Blair guy?
Yeah, yeah, Colonel Blair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think he was just maybe a settler.
Yeah. So Fort Blair was established to have like a base to fight natives.
Yeah. I just don't know where he came from.
I mean, he probably came England? On like one of, yeah, like he came from Britain.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some white guy who shouldn't be here decided that he was going to establish a fort under his own name in the new colony of Maryland in 1634.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A little over 100 years later, it was 1769.
Yeah, okay.
There was a woman by the name of Ellie Kedward who fled England and settled in the village of Blair, Maryland. She had a pretty troubled childhood and early adulthood. Her mom had died during childbirth. Her dad was disemboweled in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
She was then R-worded, beaten, tortured, and left for dead.
Mm-hmm.
An occultist found her, and he was a bit of a hermit, so he like took her back to his place and taught her ways of the occult.
Yeah.
She then became a prostitute and was institutionalized, and through her life, lost 7 pregnancies due to the abuse that she suffered. And that's what led her to be like, I got to get the hell out of England and go to the New World because things are great there.
Yep.
They're
supposed to be better, right?
Yeah, except for the genocide and stuff like that. Then winter 1785 comes around. Several children in the village of Blair accuse Ellie of witchcraft after she allegedly took their blood.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is that she took their blood in an effort to remedy an illness, but regardless, people started freaking out. She was banished and left for dead, tied to a tree in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The winter of the following year, all of the accusers and half of the town's children gradually disappeared with no explanation.
Yep.
Shortly after, the townsfolk fled.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool that the rest of the settlers, like, after all of the accused and then their families started to go missing, they're just like, all right, fuck this. And they all just, like, got out of town and left.
Yeah.
And then, so after that point, like, it went uninhabited for a long time, right?
It was uninhabited from 1786 to 1823.
Okay, cool. That's, okay, I have 1824 written down, so it sounds about right.
That's accurate, because I have a couple things before that.
Got it.
In 1809... a book titled The Blair Witch Cult was published, mm-hmm. telling Ellie's story and affirming that she possessed powers that were beyond natural order. The work was considered fiction, but a cult developed that lasted at least until the 1960s, if not beyond.
Right. I thought that was crazy.
That is, yeah. I thought that was strange. But in 1823, a railway worker happens upon the abandoned village and tells his friend, Burkett, who then establishes and renames the town Burkittsville after himself in 1824.
Yep. So a year after Burkittsville was erected, refound, essentially, like founded, because like, it had already been established as a town, but then had been abandoned. So after it was established as Burkittsville, I think there was like a town fair or something.
It's like a harvest festival or something like that. Yeah.
There was a little girl named Eileen Treacle, and she disappeared while going down to the river. And there were several eyewitnesses. I think there were like 11 eyewitnesses that claimed that they saw a pale hand reach out of the water and pull her under.
Yeah.
But they never found her body. And days after she went missing, there were oily bundles of sticks that were found in the water, and it caused the water supply to be tainted for like weeks. There was one man that ended up drinking from the water and died as a result.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I thought that was super fucking cool. I think I've got a little bit more here.
I did hear in one video, I'll link it in the show notes, but there was one video who said that the really perplexing part of how she had drowned there was that the creek was only 6 inches deep.
Yes, which you definitely could drown in, but like, how could nobody have found her body afterwards?
Yeah, and it's also like, yeah, you can drown in that. It's fairly unlikely, unless she were to have like slipped and hit her head or something like that, or had been held.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't have the date here, but I want to say that it was maybe a couple of decades later, but Robin Weaver.
1886.
When Robin Weaver went missing, also at a festival or just like a random day went by and she went missing. But she said she was lured out into the forest by a woman whose feet never touched the ground.
Yeah.
And she took her to this house and she told her to wait for her there, and she left. And Robin waited for hours, for 3 or 4 hours maybe. And the whole time she just got more and more scared that something bad was going to happen. And so she decided to leave and she went back home. And by the time she got back, there was like 3 search parties, I think, that had been sent out to look for her, and one of them hadn't come back. So a second search party was sent out to look for that one, and they were found tied up and tortured at Coffin Rock, and it looked like they had still been alive when they were tied up. They had like occultish symbols carved into their faces and their hands and their feet.
They were naked.
They
were disemboweled.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on there. It was so traumatizing for those men that they just ran back to town to get the sheriff. And by the time they came back, the scene had been completely cleaned up. There's probably still blood and stuff there. And because they said that they could still smell the stench of death, but like they had obviously been moved by something else.
Enter Coffin Rock.
Coffin Rock. I did like that they brought that up in the movie too.
Yeah,
like that whole story. And then the final trivia point I had was about Rustin Parr.
Yeah,
so Rustin Parr lived in Burkittsville. Do you have the date for that too? I think I have when he died.
1940.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah,
so in 1940, Rustin Parr, who was also kind of like a loner who lived out in the woods, he kidnapped and murdered 7 children, and he left one alive. He would bring them downstairs in pairs, because he had like built this like 3-story house out in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of, I'm trying to remember the name of the hills. Yeah, lived in Black Hills. It's right here. He left one child alive, Kyle Brody. When he came into town one day, he like went somewhere local where other people were there, and he told people that he was finally finished. Nobody knew what he meant by that until the police went to his house, and they went down to the cellar. They found the bodies of these 7 children and the one alive boy. When they asked Rustin what was going on, he had told, like, why he had done it, because he confessed to all the murders in great detail. He told them that she told me to do it. And she told me that if I came here and I told you guys what I did, that she would leave me alone. And she'd stop talking to me. He was hanged in 1941 on November 22nd. And Kyle Brody went to an insane asylum and committed suicide in 1971 by sharpening a wooden spoon on his cell floor.
Yeah, they also burnt the guy's house to the ground.
Yes, after he was hanged. Yeah, I'm sure the townsfolk probably did that. But it's crazy to imagine that, like, he was hanged in 1941.
Yeah.
Like, in the grand scheme of things, like, that was not that long ago. Like, you would think, like, that's something that, like, happened, like, the 1700s. Like, we didn't hang people in the 1900s, right? But, like, did. And then the last part on the timeline that I have here is in 1994 is when the Blair Witch Project movie is actually infused into this lore. So when it says it's based on a true story, all of that stuff beforehand that we were talking about is technically true, is based off of true accounts. And the way that the marketing for this movie had such like this great, like perfect storm of conditions, they were able to convince like a mass amount of people that this movie existed in that same timeline.
Yeah, and then there is what is rumored to be the legend that this legend is based off of, which is the legend of Mal Dyer.
Ooh.
And so I paraphrased a summary by Reddit user GatekeeperDS on the paranormal subreddit.
Nice.
And what I gathered was the legend of Mal Dyer is believed to be the inspiration behind the lore within the Blair Witch Project. There are no historical records detailing the existence or the acts of Mal Dyer. Legend states that she lived in a cottage outside the village of Seymourtown, Maryland, which is now known as Leonardtown. She was reported to be an herbalist. When a remarkably harsh winter hit the town in 1697, Dyer escaped the famine and illness unscathed. The townsfolk took note, blamed her for their hardship, and then one night entered the woods and burned Dyer's house to the ground as she slept. She awoke before succumbing to the flames and fled deeper into the woods. Her body was later found frozen, kneeling with one hand on a rock and the other raised to the sky as if crying out for mercy or bestowing a curse. Legend states that when they removed her body, prints of her hands and knees remained.
Damn, that's fucking
yeah. Why don't we have any cool shit like that rumored in our area?
Some fucking bullshit, bro.
We only get like fucking black-eyed children and Sasquatch.
There's a lot of haunted shit in Oregon.
There is a lot of haunted shit in Oregon.
Yeah, you just have to like look for it.
Keep Portland weird isn't just like a catchy phrase. Weird shit happens
actually,
here.
Yeah, it's actually really all right, all right, all right.
I do think, before we get into favorites, one of the most hilarious moments, and this is just coming from me as who I am as a human, is when they very first are driving into the woods to go start their journey. Heather, I believe it's Heather, says something to the effect of like, this is some serious woods we're heading into. And I wrote that down as I was watching and was like, laughs in Oregonian. And then they put these backpacks on them that are like 400 pounds for like one night.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, I think, two nights like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, laughs in backpacker.
Huh. Plus like carrying all that shit they were talking about carrying so much shit with them.
Yeah.
For this little out and back adventure that turned into a fucking nightmare week long trek in the woods.
Yeah.
They didn't actually say where they were from. Like, are they supposed to be from that neck of the woods?
I don't know.
Because, like, what a worse time to go get lost in the woods than in fucking October.
Right? I just, like, I was laughing so hard at the thought. And this is, you know, Oregonian. I spend time in, like, old growth conifer forests.
Sure.
So, to me, I'm like, oh, dense forest. That's, like, fucking huge trees right next to one another. You can't see shit, covered in ferns. Like, it's all fucked. These are like sticks that they're walking through.
It's like brush, like low brush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a creek that goes right through it.
Yeah, the whole time. And oh God, another wayfinding thing that kind of pissed me off. I was like, are you kidding me right now? You have a river right next, or like a little creek bed.
Yeah.
Follow the creek bed. Just follow one direction. Just follow it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know if that would work or not. Maybe that would just get you more lost. But I would think that like that would eventually take you to something that would like go through a town.
Yeah.
Go through a bigger body of water. Like,
yeah, the river's got to go somewhere.
Like, I would honestly take Josh's theory of like eventually people are going to come out and look for you. And like there are some people who know generally where you went.
Yeah.
Right. So all you got to do really is like stop wasting your stamina and your like resources by walking around in circles.
Yeah.
Bunker down, find a good, I mean, obviously, honestly, it's hard for them because they're getting haunted every night. Right. They're like not sleeping. And like,
there is that paranormal element.
Easier said than done. Right. But like, you just hunker down where you're at. You try and find like some kind of refuge, you know, kind of like, I think Michael says it at one point where like when tensions reach an all-time high, where he's like, we need to be better. We need to like do what people do. We need to make shifts and find things to do and try and be productive and not just spin our wheels and consistently get more and more frustrated.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, shall we get into favorite scenes?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
You want to go first?
I can go first. So, okay, so one of my honorable mentions for favorite scene is, it's just like it's a kind of a one-off because I think Scary Movie kind of ruined this movie a little bit for me. But it's when Heather is giving that kind of like apology towards the end where she's like apologizing to their parents and everything, and like she's getting really upset and she's like got snot coming down her nose and stuff.
I am so sorry.
Iconic camera right up the nose.
Yeah,
shot.
Yeah. It's a really like good scene. Like I'm thinking about it, like trying to watch it without seeing a Scary Movie and watching it in the theaters. Like it is a really good scene of just this like admission of guilt, this kind of like, I really fucked up. Like I really fucked up and I'm accepting these consequences and I feel so bad that like I want to get it on tape that like I'm the cause of why we're stuck out here. But I put it down as shouldn't be funny, but Scary Movie ruined it for me because I still found myself laughing. I was still kind of like, yeah, that sucks, fam.
It's The Ring for me. I watched The Ring first, but I only think about Scary Movie
scary
every
movie
time
and,
I watch
and
it.
Brenda, right? Yep. I put honorable mention was Megan, or not Megan, Mike and Heather's like uplifting chat where it was like, you know, what's your favorite food or like what do you like to do on a Sunday? Like I kind of liked that as kind of like this lighthearted like moment of just, okay, let's just pretend we're not in this situation and let's try and focus on something more positive.
Yeah. I'd drink a whole bottle of Bordeaux.
Bordeaux.
Right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You just want one meatball. That's it.
Yeah. Just one meatball.
Just one meatball. This made me laugh too, even though it's not intended to be funny. It's the same log.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was a pretty good scene. Like, it was that a good was. Scene. And when they kind of, the three of them have been walking around for a minute and they cross this log in the middle of the stream, right? And they're walking for several more hours. And then Mike realizes that they're walking past the same log again. And Heather at first is like, calm down, Mike. It's not the same log. It's not the same log. And then she starts to get more and more upset. And then she's just like, it's the same log. It's the same log. She says it like five or six times. Like after the fifth time, I started laughing.
It's so fucking, like, I know it's not supposed to be funny.
But it is.
I know it's not supposed to be.
And then finally, for my all-time favorite scene, it's going to be pretty funny because I think most people would consider this their scariest scene.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay.
But to me, it's not that I found it to be funny. It was just that it was entertaining. It was the night that they get haunted by the kids and the tent gets shook. Right?
That's, so I put that down as my scariest because I couldn't find one.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So here's why. Is like, I remember when I was watching it and I remember like I was watching with headphones in and I was trying not to watch anything else. Like I was really dialed into it. But when Heather wakes up and they're like, what the fuck is that? And they're listening. It just sounds like it's like three or four children outside playing.
Yeah.
Right. Where they're just like, they're like playing make believe and they're like running around and they're laughing and they're having fun. And so, and it, you know, the three people in the tent are like, what the fuck is that? Like at first it was just twigs snapping in the night, but now it's like, there's somebody outside of our tent. And then all of a sudden, like, their tent just starts like it's as if somebody grabs their tent poles and just starts shaking it violently. And so all three of them just go, fuck this. So they just get out and they run out. And I didn't see this. I read about this or watched this in a breakdown later, but I was wondering what it was that Heather saw.
Yeah. Cause she says something like, what the fuck is that?
And in a lot of the breakdowns that I was looking at, they were saying that it was some sort of like humanoid creature that was running on four legs and it wasn't chasing them. It was just like running in tandem with them while they were running through the forest.
Interesting.
And it was supposed to be like the witch.
I tried to like almost frame by frame it and couldn't see anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I mean, obviously found footage, like that's kind of part of the point. Like we're not seeing the big bad in all of its glory. But for me, like I found that scene to be wholly entertaining.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was clever. I wasn't scared by it. I genuinely was like, holy shit, that's cool.
That was.
That's fucking cool.
That was a really well done scene.
But I could imagine if I were watching that for the first time in the movie theater, I could see that scaring me. Like just think about like that happening to me in a tent. Like the thing is like, I don't know why feeling like you're in a tent makes you somewhat feel safe. That you literally just have like this little piece of canvas that's protecting you from the outside world. But most people do. They have some sort of security, like when you're inside of a tent. So
yeah, if I were to have watched that in the 90s in a movie theater, there would have been popcorn everywhere. I'd have been hucking my soda at somebody. Absolutely.
Oh, I think to myself too, I would literally just thought about this. If I were watching this on my phone in a tent, in the middle of the woods,
I should do that this weekend.
Holy fucking shit, that would be scary as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Maybe I'll do that this
weekend. That would be fucking cool.
Yeah.
Do it while Harrison's asleep at like 3 a.m.
I was going to say, I fall asleep so much earlier than he does.
Yeah, that'd be pretty impossible. Those are all my favorites, though.
Oh, sick. Okay. Okay. Honorable mention. So they're out in the woods, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been going for that long at this point. So everything so far is going as according to plan. Right. Like, sure, maybe they question Heather's trail finding abilities and like routing abilities, but they're still like in good spirits with one another.
Got it.
And there's a moment where they take a rest, and I believe it's Josh who is filming at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera pans around and it shows Heather behind like some bushes, and he says, "Is that the Blair Witch?" No, that's Heather taking a piss.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was
no, it's
so
just
funny.
Heather peeing.
Yeah. And then there's another moment where this is also when things are still going according to plan. And I think it's all three of them are hanging out in the tent at this point. And Mike says, "Let's not call it a captain again, you illiterate TV people. It's the skipper."
Yeah.
Because they're referring to Gilligan's Island. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because I believe it was Heather had said that Josh is kind of like Gilligan and Mike is kind of like the skipper, but she kept saying is like the captain.
Yeah. I did like that too, because I think Mike for the longest time was like trying to hold it in, and they like incorrectly said it like multiple times, and he was just like, "All right, I'm out."
All right, you illiterate TV people.
God fucking damn it.
Yeah. And then my favorite scene. So they get into town, and they're interviewing a bunch of the townspeople about the lore behind the Blair Witch.
Yeah.
And they talk to all these people, and they get a little bit from, like, this lady who looks like my Aunt Christy who's holding a kid. They talk to, like, an old man and what I believe is probably, like, his son while they're fishing, those sorts of things. But then they talk to ballerina, historian, and scientist Mary Brown.
And actress.
And actress Mary Brown. And she says that she once saw the Blair Witch down by the creek and described her as like a half human, half beast covered in hair, and talks about like how hairy her arms are and all this kind of stuff. She's an icon. Mary's the shit.
Oh, she is. Yeah. I like how when she was talking about when she opened her shawl, like her body was covered in hair, but you could tell that she was very clearly a female woman.
Yeah.
And so it was like, when she opened her shawl to Mary as a child, she was naked.
Yeah, but hairy.
But like just that idea of revealing yourself to this child as like a taunting gesture or like a scary gesture. I don't know. Like I just found it very interesting.
But that was my favorites.
Okay. On to scariest.
Yeah.
All right. So for my honorable mentions for scariness, I did Mike's... Mike's laughing fit that he has at the creek.
Oh yeah.
They're like walking and Mike starts laughing and Heather's like, "Oh my gosh, I haven't heard Mike laugh in several days. Like, what is he laughing about?" And he says something like he can't even like get it out because he's laughing so hard. But in between his gasps of laughter, he talks about how he got frustrated and he kicked the map into the creek and ruined it.
The creaking of the map.
Yeah.
Yep.
And at first Josh and Heather hope to God that he's joking. And then they realize very quickly, like, no, he's not joking. He's being serious. And it kind of like brings the tension to a point.
Yeah.
So I had that as an honorable mention. I also had, the Tuana's discovery. So Tuana is just another name for like totem. It's when they're walking through the woods and Heather hears Mike shouting like, "This is some voodoo shit. You got to come look at this." And they go up and they see all of these like stick men of various sizes. They're all like up in the trees or down low, and they're just all over the forest. And Heather's just like taking extra time to like, you know, videotape each and every one. She wants the 16 millimeter camera so she can get it on at every other different angle. And I had to put that in there because it is very like intimidating scene. We're just like, who the fuck put all these up here?
It's also like, to this day, anybody that's at least like our age and older, if you make that shape, people know what it is.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like the Halloween theme or like, yeah, Freddy Krueger's claws or like any of these, like the Blair Witch is known for like that Tawana symbol, that like totem, which is, this is a quick aside because I didn't watch the second Blair Witch movie, but apparently there's a really cool effect that's done in that movie. I guess the sequel itself is not super great as par for the course, but there is a great death in it where one of the characters finds a Tawana that has hair on it, and it's hair that belongs to another character, and she gets so fed up and frustrated that she breaks the Tawana in half, and the moment that she does that, the friend breaks in half.
Oh.
And I was, and when I saw that on one of the breakdowns, I was like, oh, that's fucking cool.
I haven't watched the second one either, but I hear it features Mary Brown.
Yeah, there is a bit of a tie in there.
And so I'm like, maybe I do need to watch it because she's an icon.
I've heard like mixed things about it, like how the same directors didn't come back for it. It's done by a new director, and that director, rather than doing what the production team wanted or the studio wanted, which was just to like basically rehash the original, he kind of did more of like a social commentary where it's kind of like each character is like a mirror image of different people who watched the movie, like the people who went super Wiccan with it and the non-believers and the people who took science as like their take, right? Like this was the cast of characters that came into it. And then they also did kind of like a, I think they said it was like a Jacob's Ladder where they like played with time and like different dimensions and things like that.
Oh, okay. Took it a little too far.
They did a lot with it.
Yeah.
That's all. Tawanas. Finally, my all-time scariest scene is probably another like obvious one, but I'm still going to say it. It's when Heather and Mike, well, when Heather finds Josh's remains in the stick bundle.
Yeah.
And I have an interesting piece of trivia about that because when they first open the tent, Josh has gone missing. They've been without him for like a full day. And then that evening, they hear him screaming in the woods. They think it's him, but they can't find out where he is and they can't verify that it's him. And the I think it's the day after that that they hear the screaming. Heather opens the tent up and there's just this like bundle of sticks that's quite obviously tied with Josh's shirt. Yeah. Right in front of their tent, and she just like grabs it and like tosses it out of their campsite and then later goes and like opens it. So the production team and like the director, they didn't tell these characters like how the story was going to progress. They gave them each notes at the beginning of every day in film canisters, but they weren't allowed to share with their co-stars like what their objectives were or what their dialogue was or any of this kind of stuff.
That's so fucking cool.
Yeah, right? They didn't even tell them when like they were going to die. They just showed up in the middle of the night and said, "Hey Josh, you're leaving. Like get your stuff and go." So when Mike and Heather actually woke up and they saw that package out front, they said, "Oh fuck that." And they threw it outside of their campsite, right? And that was the only time that production had to come in and be like, "No, you have to open that." That's part of the movie. Like, you can't just, you know, you have to go and, like, open it up.
Yeah, you can't yeet that. You need to actually,
you need to, like, yote that. And
yeah.
Like
yeah, you gone done yeeted it when you should have been yoting it.
I thought that was such a funny, like, trivia point. That, like, that was, like, the one time that they had to come out and be like, no, we put that there for a reason. You can't just go there.
What an incredible way to film a movie, too. So good.
Like, yeah, unorthodox for sure. You know, because they like intentionally withheld food from the cast like over time. Like they just gave them fewer and fewer rations, right? And then none of their dialogue was scripted. It was all, they just had kind of like objectives for different plot points that they had to reach. But other than that, like they even had safe words for if shit got too hairy.
Wow.
And I actually have a fun trivia point where like initially it was supposed to be Mike that died. But they killed Josh because him and Heather had such an antagonistic relationship on set that they were like, we got to get one of them out of there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's like they cut Josh out of there earlier because they're like, we need this story to go on a little bit longer. And these two were like, every single day they're at each other's throats and we can't have that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if it killed Josh's desire to act, because when I looked up the cast on IMDb and when I saw it below the movie when I bought it,
mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a picture.
Yeah, and I don't think that Heather and Michael really had big name careers after that point either.
No.
And I think part of it had to do with this film. Like, I know Heather got a lot of heat after this movie because of the way that she was portrayed in the movie.
Yeah.
And just people like thinking she was a terrible person. And just, it just seems like women always get hit harder than men do, especially when it comes to films and stuff. But yeah, it was probably very interesting because the three of them probably had very little acting cred. And this was such a weird way to film a movie that would have been so different. Like Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Yeah.
Like it's not a litmus test for what the rest of your career is going to look like, but it sucks that like it had to taint it so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that the three of them got paid like fucking nothing either.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had to fight. They had to fight in court to like get more money. I'm pretty sure. I'll look up that in the trivia.
Totally.
But to finish my Josh's remains, because I got lost in the sauce when it came to trivia. Heather opens. She throws that bundle away, and then away from Michael, she goes and she opens it. It's a bundle of sticks that's wrapped in Josh's flannel, and inside of the bundle of sticks is another bundle of flannel, and inside of that is real blood.
Another bundle of sticks that has flannel. And inside of that
is another bundle of sticks.
Yeah.
Inside of that is this, like, it's a piece of flannel, but inside of it is blood and teeth.
It was teeth. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Mm-hmm. And it was, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it was actual blood, but it was actual teeth.
What?
From like a dentist office.
Nice.
Which I think is pretty fucking cool.
That's sick. I like it.
You just go to a dentist office and you're like, hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah. Hey, what do you do like, with your teeth at the end of the day?
I mean, if we're being honest, like if the patients don't want to bring them home, yeah, they probably do have like a small, like probably not a stash of them, but probably like a, yeah, I mean, if you want to.
Oh, I would.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, you need in my tooth jar?
Oh, yeah. My jar of teeth. Yeah. Hundo a piece. But yeah, so that was my scariest scene.
Sick. That's a good one.
Plus trivia.
All of mine have been mentioned.
Even honorable mentions?
Even honorable mentions.
Oh,
so
sheesh.
Initially, my scariest was going to be the sounds of the children, because I'm like, I feel like that's...
Alone.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like, I feel like that's other than when Mike admits that he kicked the map into the creek.
Right.
I feel like that's like the peak of all of the tension.
Yeah.
It's not scary. Like, the movie's not scary. But that was what I felt like would have been the scariest for most people.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I picked that one for scariest. My honorable mentions were Mike kicking the map in the creek and the stick figures in the trees. So.
God damn it.
Yep. We strike again.
We strike again.
But I will say, the execution of that scene with them in the tent and hearing the children's voices and that sort of thing,
that
was so fucking well done. And this movie, I understand why it like set the pace for every found footage movie going forward, because it does all of the things that we love about found footage movies, where it's like things are dark so you can't see it. The camera's shaking at just the right moment so you can't pinpoint something. Like all of those sorts of tropes,
right.
And does them perfectly.
Yeah.
And that scene was one of those examples. Like you hear the kids, the tent starts shaking. Do you ever see one? No.
Nope.
Do you ever see whatever it is that's running in tandem with them? No. Do you ever see Josh again? No. Like, everything is done in the way that it should be done to make it that iconic found footage style.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a really good point. You never see any creatures or ghosts.
No.
Outside of the Tuanas, that's it.
Yeah.
And the three characters that you see.
Yeah.
It's all, the rest of it is kind of all like, not necessarily their imagination, but it's not even like harmful.
No.
It wasn't like stakes or knives came through their tent. It was a bunch of kids that were shaking it and like trying to scare them. And like the figure that was running wasn't chasing them. It was running in tandem to them. So it's like, what's going on here? Is
yeah.
Even what is the intent?
Even when they get to the house and the essentially replication of what happened with the kids,
mm-hmm.
Where Mike is then facing in the corner while Heather becomes the first victim sort of thing.
Yeah.
Even that scene, you don't see anything scary because as soon as Heather gets knocked down, camera hits the ground and then it's the done. End.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that scene very interesting. Like, watched it the first time, didn't really think about anything of it. I have a fun trivia point I'll bring up. But the second time I watched it, I remember hearing more. Like, the first time I watched it, it seemed like Mike was kind of like going nuts and was just like hearing things and going on his own adventure. And he was going so fast that like Heather couldn't keep up with him and was trying to like run after him. Right. But then when I watched it earlier today, a second time, when they first enter the house, they're split up slightly because Heather's trailing behind and Mike is like not waiting for her and is just like walking through the house. But then as soon as he gets into the house, you can hear Josh. He's yelling for Heather. He's like yelling Heather's name. And so that's when Mike is like, oh, I hear him. He's upstairs. And so he's like trying to run upstairs and he's looking around. And then when Heather is just about at the top of the stairs, he like looks around and he doesn't see Josh. And so he's like, oh, he must be downstairs. And so then he just like immediately turns and like goes down the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And then I just felt like the ending, and I kind of figured it was just because it was such a low budget. You couldn't really figure out. It wasn't that they couldn't figure out a way to kill these characters, but it was like you didn't have the budget to really like find a creative way to kill them. Yeah. So you just have them get knocked out and then the camera falls and like that's the end of it.
Yeah. I've watched this movie a lot.
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't say a lot. This is probably my like fourth time watching it. But up until this time around, I didn't recognize that that was supposed to be like the same thing that happened to the Seven, where one was forced to look in the corner and the other one was like that whole thing.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That didn't hit until this time around. And it made me appreciate the ending a tiny bit more. It's still not a great ending. But like, before we get into trivia, I have two quotes from the movie.
Ooh,
to share.
Yes, absolutely.
The first one, just because I thought it was ironic. Nowadays, we see this movie as pretty cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's just the time period. Though.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, definitely. But there's a section where they're like just about to get started with filming and they're in the hotel room all like sharing some booze and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Heather had just asked like if they had any weed and they're talking about how they're going to approach filming everything. And she says like, I really want to avoid any cheese.
Yeah. I think it has something to do with like, they didn't want to bring Halloween into it.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to really, well, Heather at least wanted to really focus on like the urban legend in the town and not necessarily try and tie it to any particular like holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought like, thinking of our perspective of the movie now, her being like, I really want to avoid any cheese is like that aged well. Like a good cheddar.
Like a good cheddar. Like a good Gouda.
And then the second one was, I can't have a cigarette in the tent, but he can fart as much as he wants.
Right? And then Josh's response is like, hey, I don't remember giving him any fart allowance. That you did not hear those words come out of my mouth in that order.
Those are my good quotes.
I wish I had a good quote for you, but I don't think I have a good one from this movie. Well, actually, no, that's not true. My quote here was, it's the same log.
Yep.
It's the same log.
It's a different log. It's a different log. It's the same log. It's the same log.
It's in the bone.
It's in the bone.
Trivia.
Trivia.
I will pull up the trivia on my phone real quick because I know it's going to have more in here, but I did want to write this down as a like a little shout out. One, for all of the Blair Witch lore earlier, I specifically looked at this YouTube video called the Exploring series. It's just called Exploring the Blair Witch Mythology. It's like a 20-minute video on YouTube. It's really helpful. But I also wanted to shout out Film Theory. I don't know if you've watched Film Theory before on YouTube, but they do, I don't know. He just does like different scenarios about different movies. And he does a really interesting video about the Blair Witch, where he has a theory that Mike and Josh made up this whole scenario to lure Heather into the woods to kill her.
Huh.
I personally don't believe it to be like the intent of the director, like that's why this movie was filmed, but it is a very interesting theory.
It is, yeah.
Like it kind of, and the evidence behind it is just like the antagonistic relationship that like Josh and Mike have against Heather, how they kind of like constantly like demean and kind of belittle her throughout it. And then like Josh disappearing, they claim in this video that like that was all a setup and that like Josh and Mike were in on it. And it was just to slowly like drive Heather crazy. And then they were going to bring her to the house and like kill her there. And so that's why Mike is like, he's upstairs, and he runs upstairs. And then like the theory is that Josh is also in the house, but they're just like running around each other and they're trying to lure Heather into the basement to kill her.
Huh.
It's a very interesting video where you're just like, okay, I can see it. Like, okay.
Like I can't confirm nor deny.
Yeah, it was just like, it was just an interesting theory. I don't think it's true, but I found it interesting. And it's a long video where you're like, damn, somebody put some serious thought into this. Here, let me look up, see if I can find any other good trivia.
Good trivia. Maybe one day I'll make a little soundbite, kind of like the intro, like same sort of vocal situation, but it'll just announce our sections.
I like that too. Yeah. Or even
like favorite scenes.
Yeah. Right. Or like after our spoiler free synopsis, it's like, hey, we're getting to spoilers. Like if you hear this sound here, like that's all the time you have to back out. Right.
My customer who listens, the one who listens the most, I should say, she said that she got a little behind because she started, when the episode is released, she now makes herself watch the movie before she listens to the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so she's like, I got a little behind because I was like, oh, wait, I have a few movies that I need to watch.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
All right. Trivia.
Trivia.
Heather Donahue's mother received sympathy cards from people who believed that her daughter was actually dead or missing.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At around 46 minutes, in a scene where the main actors are sleeping in a tent at night, the tent suddenly shakes violently and they all get scared. This was unscripted and the director shook the tent and the actors actually were scared.
Nice.
Which I think is pretty cool. It's like one of the only times that like the crew members would ever show up like on set, because most of the time they were nearby, but they were out of earshot. Right. And they had radios so they could check in with them every once in a while. But other than that, they just left the cast members. I think what was intended was that they probably slept in separate tents or separate areas. Like they sometimes filmed things together, but they must have had them separate because they had film canisters every morning that each of them had like their own notes that they weren't allowed to like share with the other group about like their character motivations and things that they needed to like say and, you know, stuff like that. And then there was that night that like they killed Josh and they just showed up in the middle of the night and like woke him up and they were like, come on, let's go. Come on, get your shit. Like, come on, we're going. No, leave that stuff. Like,
yeah. Yeah, then, no, we're going to scatter that. Yeah. Hey, while we're at it, can we have some of your teeth?
Could you lie down for a second? Yeah. let's see here. The three leads believed the Blair Witch was a real legend during filming, though of course they knew the film was going to be fake. Only after the film's release did they discover that the entire mythology was made up by the film's creators.
Hell yeah. They did such a good job with that.
Yeah, no shit. Like, I was watching a really cool mythology video about this that was talking about like all of the marketing that was done in terms of like creating a website for this back in 1999, right? Creating forum comments that were talking about teens get going missing in the woods and like where to find this documentary, right? Like they went through all of this trouble to like make the lore, like to make their movie fit into the lore.
Yeah. They manufactured a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Which would not have been possible now.
No.
Kind of like when I was talking earlier about how like this is similar to War of the Worlds. When War of the Worlds was released on radio, it baffled and tricked a wide amount of people into thinking that like Earth was actually being invaded by aliens.
Yeah.
And it was similar for the Blair Witch Project, where people actually thought that this was a documentary about three college students who went missing in the woods.
Yeah.
Trying to find a witch. It took 8 days to shoot this film. 8 whole days. To promote discord between actors, the directors deliberately gave them less food each day of shooting.
I'm going to say something controversial. I'm glad they did that. It made it seem real. Like, it made it feel like this was the way that it was actually being filmed.
Absolutely. Yeah. It led into more of the tension.
And I'm not normally somebody that's like, yeah, starve the actors. But well, like,
they weren't starving them. They were just giving them less food. I appreciate it too.
Yeah.
Like they knew what they're getting into. Like they knew like what the parameters were. And like I do also appreciate that like they had safe words. So they had safe words not only for like it was getting too real and like they needed to take a break, but it was for another reason too. It was just for like to give the other person the idea of like, I'm just acting. Like we're playing a game. Like, yeah, I can't quite remember. But so I appreciated that like they tried really hard to make sure that it was as safe as possible, but while also like taking risks.
Yeah.
To make a movie that felt more authentic.
Yeah.
In the tension that it was displaying.
They weren't just like Judy Garlanding it and being like, you get bone broth and cigarettes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there also wasn't ever a point where like these actors were hearing cut and then they were going off and they could like eat their sandwiches and like hang out in the green room.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's just what I appreciated about it. I
can't even hear green room anymore without thinking of that fucking hand.
At around 46 minutes, the Blair Witch was supposed to be seen in the movie. As the characters are running out of their tent, Heather yells, "Oh my God, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is that?" The cameraman was supposed to pan to the left, where the audience would briefly see a woman wearing a white gown in the distance. But the cameraman forgot to pan to the left, and the scene was not reshot.
So whoever it was that they had in the white gown out there in the corner was just like,
well, fuck me, I guess.
Yeah, right? Well... That's so fucking funny. Well, and it says like the cameraman was supposed to pan to the left, where the audience would briefly see a woman wearing a white gown in the distance. They would see a woman wearing a gown, not running, but just see her standing there.
Yeah.
The cameraman forgot to pan to the left. The scene was not reshot. That's so fucking funny. Because I have to be honest with you. I mean, it reminded me more of The Ritual when I was thinking about some creature running alongside these characters. But I think that would have been a hell of a lot more unsettling.
Yeah.
If you just looked over and just saw something just like running in tandem with you.
The shape of a woman.
Yeah.
But hairy and on all fours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, right?
Mm-hmm. We should make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, have you seen Mama?
Yeah.
Mama. Yeah. I'm just thinking about like those kids when they find those kids for the first time and they look like weird creatures, the way that they're walking around on their hands and their fingers are all long and their like hair is like down in front of their faces. Like that's kind of what I picture.
The end of that movie pissed me off so much.
So fucking much. I saw it in the theaters too and I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
Let's see here. The directors kept in touch with actors Heather, Michael, and Josh via walkie-talkies to ensure the three would not become lost during their trek. Reportedly, they got lost at least 3 times. At around 53 minutes, the reactions from Heather, Mike, and Josh when they discover they have walked south all day and ended up in the same spot is real. They were genuinely upset that they had walked all day for nothing.
You know, they signed up for it.
That fucking sucks, though. Before the film was released, the three main actors were listed as missing, presumed dead on IMDb.
What?
That's fucking cool.
They really went all out.
Heather Donahue also told Fangoria magazine that the final scene was so terrifying for her that she kept hyperventilating and crying long after the shoot was over. Aww.
Aww.
Oh, here we go. To maintain the film's fear factor, the three main actors agreed to stay in character for the entire 8 days of filming. Periodically, if an actor had a break from character, then the remaining two actors also had a break from character, but only after collectively reciting their safety word, taco.
Taco.
Taco. All three actors were given no more than a 35-page outline of the mythology behind the plot before shooting began. All lines were improvised, and nearly all the events in the film were unknown to the three actors beforehand. They were often on-camera surprises for them all.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
I love it.
Took 8 days to shoot the film, but 8 months to edit it.
I could see that.
Apparently, Heather Donahue brought a knife into the forest while filming was taking place because she didn't like the idea of sleeping in the woods with two guys.
I don't blame her.
I actually kind of liked that. I liked that she had that big buck knife like on her side.
Yeah.
Heather Donahue faced a considerable backlash as a result of her role, including threatening encounters and difficulty finding other employment. She retired from acting in 2008 to pursue a career in medical cannabis.
Hell yeah. Get it, girl.
Josh's shouts in the final scene were pre-recorded and played through speakers hidden away in the woods.
Ooh.
That's fucking cool. The crackling sounds in the woods were made by the directors and their assistants walking up the camp's perimeter, breaking sticks, and then tossing them in various directions. That's actually really cool.
I like that sort of practical effect, that it was the crew that was doing it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Heather Donahue and Michael C. Williams were unaware that Joshua Leonard was going to disappear near the end of the shoot. Originally, Williams' character was supposed to do that. The directors had left a note for Leonard instructing him to wait for the others to fall asleep and then leave the tent. They then had to wait for 45 minutes before calling him out, telling him, "You're dead." Leonard was actually glad to leave because there was a Jane's Addiction concert that he wanted to go to. That's actually so fucking funny. At around an hour and 10 minutes, the close-up of Heather Donahue's face as she tapes her farewell video was unintentional. Donahue planned to have her whole face in frame, but she had zoomed in the camera too much. However, the directors thought that the closeness to all the tears and the phlegm really added to the ugly realism of the scene and kept it in.
So the bats in the cave scene was unintentional.
let's see. In the movie, Heather and Mike share a somewhat antagonistic attitude towards each other. In the commentary, the directors revealed it was Heather and Josh who were arguing most of the time, and more heatedly. Almost all of the footage of their arguments was taken from the final cut after the filmmakers decided it was like both men were ganging up on Heather.
Ooh.
Which must have been really hard, being in the woods for 8 days with two people that like you feel like are constantly ganging up on you.
Yeah.
Like, but that's just how, that's, I don't know if that was just how it was acted, right? Like, because I also don't blame that series of events, right? Because if you're thinking about it, Heather was the like bullheaded director of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And to the point of like, even when Michael and Josh were telling her, stop filming this, we're not, this isn't funny anymore. Like it's, and it's not like she was playing a joke, but it's like, we're fucking lost in the middle of the woods and you care about making a documentary, like stop it.
Yeah.
You know, so I can like, I can almost give them the hazing, ganging up on her kind of thing, because they probably blame her just as much as she blames herself, right? For like them being in that whole situation. This film uses the word fuck 154 times.
Sick.
Many of the Futhark runes seen in the old house are reversed, which has a special meaning. A reversed rune implies a dark or negative fate for the person who reads them.
Ooh.
I think that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to end with this one. The slime on Josh's backpack was actually KY jelly.
Hot.
All right, shall we do our ratings?
Yeah. You want to go first?
I will.
What's your weapon? Whole weapon.
So I kind of figured my weapon would probably be exhaustion.
Okay.
Like a mental exhaustion just from like being trapped in the woods for 8 days. And just this idea that like these characters haven't even fucking slept in a lot of this time too.
Yeah.
Like they've just been in a complete heightened sense of fear. So I'm going to go with exhaustion. So for quality, I'm giving this movie a lot of grace because it is a first, right? So like even if it didn't hit me the same way, I have to give it more credit just because of the hallmark that it is.
I bet we're going to have fairly similar ratings with this.
We'll see. So for quality, I gave it a 4 out of 5. I thought it was very well put together. I didn't see a lot of gratuity. Even the scenes where, like, there's a lot of shaky cam and, like, you can't see anything, that's the whole fucking point. Like, yeah. So I'm like, I give it a lot of that. That leads more into the realism that I'm not seeing every single detail on screen.
Yeah. The reason why we criticize that now and know that as a technique is because of this
movie.
Yeah.
I liked the cast in this movie. I personally really liked the tension in this movie. And I appreciate knowing now as an adult the way that it was filmed in this kind of like super unorthodox way leads to a more realistic product.
Yeah.
I feel really bad in hindsight that like the actors probably suffered some repercussions after the fact and during the fact, right? This was probably way more of a mentally taxing film to make than any other horror movie would have been.
Yeah.
Just from the perspective of like what was demanded out of you as an actor. For scariness, I didn't really find this movie that scary. So I'd probably give it more like a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Exhaustions. And then for rewatchability, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5.
Sick.
Super digestible. It's like 1 hour and 20 minutes. It's got great little details in it. I felt fairly entertained through it. I didn't find any points where I felt like it lagged a whole bunch. And I will tell you that it is one of those movies that like, you hear it's based on a true story, and so your brain just automatically goes and like looks up all the lore for it, and that is hours of content that's actually very entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, everything surrounding this movie is just as, if not more, entertaining than the movie itself. Right. Yeah. For my weapon, I chose Hive Mind. And I was thinking more into the lore behind it. Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, this lady was killed. This guy was killed. Like, the town as a collective let the hive mind get in the way of the best interests of their community a couple times.
Sure.
And then also, they all kind of start having this, like, hive mind experience of like, oh my God, all of these supernatural things are happening. This is happening. This is happening.
Yeah.
And they're amping each other up just as much as anything else is actually going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that being said, for quality, I gave it a 4 out of 5. Much for a similar reason where it's like, sure, if this were to come out now, I would have a lot more critique about the way that it's filmed and the way that certain shots are, the way that certain shots played out and that sort of thing.
Right.
But remembering that this is like a foundational movie for this genre, I'm like, they did it and they did it well.
Yeah.
And they're what to this day found footage movies are modeling themselves after. So,
and nobody's ever come close to it.
Nobody's ever come close. And the techniques that they use today are still those techniques. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's pretty cool. I gave it a 4 out of 5. Scariness, I gave it a 2 out of 5. Yeah. I also didn't think it was scary. The only reason why I even gave it a 2 was because I thought the kids scene was pretty well executed, and the figures, I can't remember what they were called.
The Tuanas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Tuanas, to this day make people have a feeling.
Yeah.
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 And so,
oh my
like,
God, if you woke up in the middle of the night and like those things were all around your campsite, I would shit a brick.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would build a brick wall on my way out of that forest with all of the shit that I would be spewing.
Yep.
And then for rewatchability, I gave it a 3 out of 5. It was shorter than I remembered.
Yeah.
Super easily digestible. And so, if you're going down a rabbit hole and looking up some lore and stuff like that anyway, if you want to just throw it on in the middle of your research, it's quick.
It is really quick. And I remember when I was first watching it, like the scene that everybody remembers in that movie is literally the last like 6 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Right. The other hour and 24 minutes is just a lot of walking through the woods.
Yep.
And a lot of like, fuck.
Yeah.
But it is, it's highly, it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Like I did find myself pretty entertained by it. And also like, not just entertained, but I felt for these characters in the sense of like finding an urban legend, thinking that an urban legend is cool, wanting to research it, getting a little bit in over your head. And then now you're kind of in this haunting.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it's a pure survival and you've got to figure out how to like navigate the evil and escape it at the same time. And so really, really solid. And just the fact that like you were saying, this is a movie that all other movies of this style have tried to model after, but nobody's ever been able to come close to it. And it's not even from like a sense of budget or profit margin. It's from a sense of like people, you can't emulate this same perfect storm of events. I also heard it described as like lightning in a bottle, where you could have a moment where like you can suspend belief for people that much. That you can get people to believe in something that is 10 toes down, like not real, like that a lot of people truly don't believe in.
But you can manufacture enough lore around it that people genuinely think that this is a documentary.
Yeah. And I think there's something that is really cool about that. And it's one of those things that only happens like once in a blue moon, like once in a lifetime, when just the right combination of circumstances happens, or when people are able to take advantage at the right time.
Yeah.
Like in terms of the internet at the time and being able to manipulate data, be able to manipulate forums and things like that to just like solidify your lore even more. You're like, oh, well, look, like this one, you know, forum post that has this, you know.
Yeah, it has to be real. Look at all these Reddit users who are like saying all this
but
stuff.
But now, like, you wouldn't be able to have that same perfect storm.
No.
Because you would just have too much fact checking that goes into it and would be able to debunk it very quickly.
Yeah. Solid movie.
Super, super fucking good.
Yeah.
I think the last thing to do is our what doing.
What doing?
What doing?
It makes me think of Indian Ringneck TikTok.
What doing? What doing?
It's been a week. Let's see. Last Friday.
I know, right? What a week it's been.
What the fuck even happened last Friday?
Did we go rock climbing last week? I don't know that we did.
I don't think so. Because I think I figured out what's been going wrong. And the reason why.
Oh, that's right. Because you've been injured.
Yeah. So my elbows have been fucked over the last like week, mm-hmm. week and a half ish. And I think I figured out what went wrong is when bouldering, because I don't have the safe feeling of having the harness and the belayer, mm-hmm. I am like way over gripping on things and I don't have the grip strength for that. And I'm also really clenched. Like my arms are at like probably like a 10 or 15 degree angle because I'm holding myself as close to the wall as possible.
Right.
And I think I'm like straining my forearm and my bicep tendons and my elbow.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the doctor tomorrow just to make sure that I'm not like causing some sort of big issue.
Yeah.
But I think it ultimately comes down to I need to be doing some physical therapy on my grip strength and on my forearms.
Mm-hmm.
So I grabbed these things that are called like TheraBand flex bars.
Yeah.
And you just like kind of twist them in different ways and it helps to build up the tendon strength.
That's good.
And it's hurting less now.
Good.
But it was annoying as fuck for a little bit.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with your tendons, man.
Like, yeah.
Because they don't recover very fast and there isn't a real foolproof way to kind of like protect, like repair from damage.
Yeah.
Like you can protect yourself as much as possible and like prevent.
Yeah.
But.
And they take forever to build strength. Like forever.
Yeah. That's why you can't go too hard too fast.
Yeah. It's a lot of the reason why when people take performance enhancing drugs, they will get like tendon snaps and everything because their muscles are able to load much more quickly than their tendons are.
Tendons, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like it's a really common thing, especially in the bodybuilding community. If people do performance enhancers, they'll snap bicep tendons. Yeah. It's gnarly.
That sounds fucking awful. Holy shit.
Yeah. But aside from being in pain, Saturday, I got to go on a hike with Jordan. That was fun. It was my first time going down to Eugene in quite a while.
Yeah.
So went down there, met Jordan, and then went out toward Lowell and went on a hike. And that was really fun. Sunday.
How does it look over there? Is it starting to come back? Because there was a pretty bad fire this last year.
Yeah, it's coming back. It's getting there.
That's cool.
Oh, and then after the hike on Saturday, I had gotten a text from Nick where he was like, hey, I don't know if this is something that we would want to do, because he knows I'm not like a big group person for the most part.
Yeah.
And he was like, but a bunch of my coworkers are going to go out to a bar and then go to a movie. Just wanted to see if you'd be down. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like we never go out with like Nick's coworkers. And so we went, turns out it was one of his coworkers' birthday.
Aww.
So we got to like go out and have drinks. And then we went to the Hollywood Theater and watched, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's essentially a movie that's a Talking Heads concert. And so it was just, everybody was like watching a concert and dancing and that kind of stuff.
That's super cool.
It was a super Portland thing and it was really fun. And then on Monday, got to reconnect with some old friends who are going through some struggles with an old mutual friend of ours.
Got it.
But we hadn't seen them in like over a year. So it was nice to reconnect. We like swapped some books and stuff like that.
Aww.
It was a good time. So it's been a lot more social of a week than I normally have.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it was fine. But you know, I miss just us and some rocks.
Yeah.
So
let's get back into it.
Yeah.
I know today is kind of like a rest day for me where I had to tell myself, even though I wanted to go do something physically active, that like I needed to rest. Like I had like a weird moment today where I went to go staple something with like a staple gun and my wrist just did this weird, like, you know, when, like you almost roll your ankle on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It was like my wrist tried to do that, but
oh,
it was just while trying to like punch something. And so I was like, okay, I need to just take a break today.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to injure myself if I push myself today.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm recognizing that my body isn't the body of an early 20-year-old anymore.
It's unfortunate, but
yeah.
That's how time be slipping.
Yeah. I did finish one book. No, two books since the last time we recorded. So the first one was this book called Sour Candy by Keelan Patrick Burke.
Mm.
It's really short. It's 107 pages.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was, you know, it was fine. I don't really have a whole lot of like remarkable things to say about it.
Okay.
It was really highly recommended for people that are into like the splatterpunk stuff. I didn't even leave it a rating. Like it was what it was.
Didn't really itch that part of your brain that you wanted it to.
Yeah. I think I was just reading it because I needed a break from King, before I went into Apt People, which I just finished.
Oh, wow.
And that one was, that was king.
That was it good?
It was king. It was good. Okay. It's also a short, it's 224 pages.
Okay.
So it's a little guy. But I would say without having too much that's actually brutal happen, the main character in that book is one of the most unsettling characters I've ever heard of.
Oh shit.
Because he is a kid that is born into like perfect circumstances. Like he has really emotionally available and understanding parents.
Okay.
Who are like, they're like friends to him as much as their parents. Like they make great money. He's never had to struggle for anything. He gets great grades. He's good at sports, like all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
But then he seeks out somebody who can help him be a horrible person. And like he chooses to be evil.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really unsettling. And it starts out with him, like, I think like 13 years old.
Wow.
And that's what he's choosing.
Wow.
Yeah. Or maybe it's not, maybe it's like 15, something like that. Between 13 and 15.
Okay.
And yeah, he's just like, I want to be a horrible person. Yeah.
Wildin'.
Yeah. But that's what I've been up to.
What have I been up to? I feel like the last week, I did a little bit of rock climbing this last week. I did go do some more archery on the 30th with a small subset of our rock climbing crew. And I actually bought a bow that day too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I'm pretty stoked about. I bought like a 30-pound like recurve bow, and it was pretty funny because, you know, I'm left-handed, so I had one of three choices.
Do you want this option? This option that's kind of the same as the first option, but a little different?
Yeah, right.
Or do you want this secret third option that's the same as the other two options, just a little different?
It literally, like, I felt like when I was at the beginning of a Pokemon game, and it was like, choose your starter Pokemon. They're all essentially the same, but they just have slightly different variations.
Yeah. Yeah, but one's green, one's red, and one's, one's blue. Which one do you want?
Other than that, it doesn't matter. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I saved up a little bit of money to buy that and got to shoot it for the first time. I was, I'm still not super accurate with it, but it is a ton of fun. It's super entertaining.
Yeah.
I love kind of having something that works similar muscles to rock climbing, but but also works like a different part of my brain. And I like it too because like I love going to the shooting range with Harrison and shooting our handguns, but bullets are expensive.
Yeah.
Shooting a bow is not, after you get just like the initial cost out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And also there is something to be said. This is not at all to like discount how much of a skill marksmanship is in general.
Right.
But there is something to be said for like trying to think of how to word it, but you're more of a mechanical piece of a bow than you are of a gun. And so it does seem like it takes kind of a heightened level of being in tune with it.
True. It's not necessarily like a point and shoot. You have to keep your body like with this specific type of tension. You have to use certain muscles to like pull it back and be efficient. There's like a lot of different components that are built into it. And I find myself, I'm not a super athletic person. And the reason why is because I think about things too hard. Like there's a difference between being like, oh, I just swing my body this way and I just reach out and I grab it with my right hand, right? And then actually being able to like do that in the moment.
Yeah.
And I find myself when I'm shooting my gun or like shooting my bow and arrow that like I have to spend a lot of time just like getting the technique down of just drawing it and shooting and not even thinking about where I'm aiming, right? Because like I'm just trying to get this like kind of muscle memory down. And I find myself when I think about my technique and I think about, oh, I got to bend my arm this way and I got to look down this way and I got to do this, I miss the target more often than when I just pull it back and I don't think about it. I just like pull it back and fire.
Yeah.
Like every time I hit into that middle ring in the yellow is when I just like pull it back and fire. And I'm like, how the fuck?
Yeah.
How do I?
It's when you just trust your body to do it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I have also found myself several times, and I took a picture of it yesterday, where I will like every single time I'm aiming for the same target, but I will have two arrows that almost go in the exact same spot, right? Just like right off of the target. And it happened like four or five times where like I'd have these five arrows, but two of them would be right next to each other. And I thought to myself, I was like, when I can dial in like wanting this to happen, I'm going to be Robin Hood.
Yeah. And, you know, coming back around to the just like letting it happen and that being successful, when you think about it, we as humanity have only been shooting guns for, you know, a few hundred years at this point.
Sure.
We've been shooting those things for thousands of years. So like that just in like a really what's the word that I'm thinking of?
Instinctive.
Yeah. And like primitive. A really just like primitive and instinctive level, your body probably just knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. My aunt, I posted a picture online because I asked Harrison to take a picture of me with the bow because I wanted to do a review for the company. And I posted online and I was like, I found a new hobby. And my aunt like commented like, channel your grandpa's. And I thought that was very cute.
Yeah.
I didn't know either of them bow hunted, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. My dad does. Yeah.
Yeah. I know lots of bow hunters now, like they hunt with those big compound bows.
Yeah.
Which are cool. Like, don't get me wrong. I see people at the range with those all the time. And I've shot a couple of them. I don't know why they just seem super weird and complicated to me. I'm just like, I just want a fucking bow.
There's a lot of pieces to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the last time I went to the range by myself, it was myself and another girl that were shooting these like kind of old school recurve bows. And then there were two gentlemen who were both shooting compound bows. And like their compound bows had like a sight and an extra sight on the on the string and like a little thing here and like all of these different extras on the bow to like help them really like be accurate. And both this girl and I, Lila was her name, are just using like our little shitty eyeballs, right? just to aim. Like, that's yeah. it. Like,
yeah, they're like, hang on, I have my scope, and then I have my infrared scope, and then I have my laser scope. And you're like, I got glasses.
I got. It's been funny for me lately, too, because I'm left-handed, but like, I feel like every time I learn something new, I have to try it right-handed. And so for a long time, I thought that I was kind of like either eye dominant when it came to marksmanship, but I'm not. I'm left eye dominant. And so yesterday when I went to go shoot my first arrow, I used my right eye instead of my left eye, and the arrow went underneath the target and off off the lane. And I was like, why the fuck did that happen, right? And I thought about it for a second. And when I went back and I went to go shoot my next one, I was like, oh, I did. I used this eye and not this eye. And like, that would mean that when I shot, it went that way and not that way.
Are you typically the same dominant as you are hand?
No. Okay. Well, for me, it depends on how I was taught. So for me, like, I write with my left hand, but I like throw ball with my right hand. Okay. Right? Like, I bowl with my right hand, but like I cut things with my left hand. I scissor with my left hand, but like I clipper with my right hand. So like it depends on like what the activity is.
That so sucks that the scissor couldn't have been your right hand, because there's such a premium on left-handed scissors, and it's fucked.
It's fucked.
It's so fucked.
Oh yeah. Also, like my notebooks, because I'm constantly getting ink all over my hands.
Yeah.
All of my notebooks are backwards. So if anyone ever opens it, like this page is blank because it's the back of the notebook.
Nick, when he went to go get like really nice scissors for cutting fabric and yarn, it was like an extra $10 for him to get the left-handed scissors.
Which is some fucking horse shit.
Yeah.
<'Cause it's literally laughs> just, anyways.
Yeah, and you know what we can blame that on? Christianity.
Fucking assholes. Hey, everybody, have a great rest of your night.
Yeah, bye.
Oh, actually.
Wait, never mind. We're here.
No. You can
We're
stop
still
it.
Here.
I was going to have you do a separate.
Okay, bye.
Where's it? Bye. Hey, everybody. It's Karina. I'd like to tell you of a couple of announcements. We have got a Patreon now. You can subscribe at patreon.com/ It's Always Spooky. For $5 a month, we will be having some very special features, so stay tuned for those. Starting with every week, we'll be posting what episode we're planning on doing. So please make sure that you post your scariest and your favorite scenes so that we can feature them in the episode. If Patreon isn't your speed, you can also send us a tip on our Ko-fi account. That's ko-fi.com/ It's Always Spooky. Please, please, please also email us your spooky stories and any recommendations to itsalwaysspookypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much. It's always spooky.